Hey, Spencer.
Hey, Chris.
How we doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Fantastic.
What are you working on nowadays?
Manager things, reading lots of documents, writing documents. I could talk about how none of our front end tests are actually working in CI. I don't want to make us look like clowns, but
hey, we caught it.
It's true. It's true. So let's talk about Webpack and some of the work you've been doing to kind of decouple our Webpack builds from the asset pipeline. So just for context, you know, we have a Rails app, and we run all of our assets through the asset pipeline. Just to get up and running quickly using TypeScript and React, we had Webpack bundling that code, but then we still ended up just pushing it through the asset pipeline, putting it into the same, creating a separate like Webpack manifest and letting that handle, you know, after Webpack doing its processing, it would still go through the processing in the asset pipeline and before it got pushed up to our CDN. Obviously, that's not a great setup, and there's some duplication of effort there. Do you mind going into some of the, I guess, starting with, you know, what the motivation is for us, what that unlocks for us, and what steps you've had to take in this whole process?
Yeah. I think we've maybe touched on it a time or two. And then last time we were talking about some of the front end performance work, or at least measuring and collecting what our current front end performance metrics are. But there's kind of like two main goals that we kind of want to achieve with a lot of this front end work. One is hopefully improving performance, because we've heard it's not great. And some of those metrics that we've now started collecting kind of show and prove that quantitatively it is not that great. And then second, we want to kind of start isolating some of the different parts of our application. So like you were mentioning, we have a monolithic Rails app that includes everything, the entire front end, the entire like Rails server, which now is becoming more and more like an API, but still does a lot of server rendering. So we kind of want to start to decouple some of those pieces, but that's very hard or impossible to do when our front end build process is very tightly coupled with our like server rendering build process and all of those pieces. So we're kind of trying to make our front end build process more open to change and improvements so that we can start to improve performance, but then also kind of start to open up the opportunity to potentially isolate it from all of our other application code.
And why is that important, that isolation on the Webpack builds?
Kind of isolating Webpack gives us the opportunity to leverage a lot of the API and tooling that is kind of around Webpack, like supported directly, or external plugins and things that can be supported with that. So, for example, code splitting is one thing that we would like to do with Webpack, but is very challenging or impossible to kind of do through the Rails asset pipeline. And then some other things like including source maps for our error reporting. Today, we can't do that because it's going through the Rails asset pipeline. So that's changing that file. So the source maps would no longer be valid. So just some things kind of like that.
Yeah, so that makes sense. And I'm excited about a lot of the things that this kind of unlocks for us, like features of Webpack that we weren't able to leverage before, particularly the source maps and our error reports. I think everyone was excited when you announced that this week. I'd love to dig into the details of how we actually pulled this off. And I think an important element of that is that you maintain the ability to, we kind of put it out behind a toggle, and you maintain the ability to do all of this with like kind of zero downtime, like testing it out on a handful of like internal users and rolling it out incrementally. Do you mind going into kind of what that setup looks like and how you pulled that off?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, like you mentioned, I mean, every feature we build for the most part is behind a feature toggle. I think that just unlocks some pretty awesome capabilities in the sense that we can first roll it out to a user or a handful of users in our staging environment and test it out, make sure we're not actually breaking anything. And then we can roll it out to 100% because for the most part, staging users are only internal users. So we can at least have a bunch of internal people kind of clicking through it. If they see any issues, if they run in any errors, that's very isolated. And then in production, like you said, we can start to test it on some of our internal accounts and roll it out to just our users, and then ensure that it's actually still working and functioning properly. And then even as we continue to roll out, if there's any unexpected issues that maybe a new commit causes an issue, or there's some change that like we didn't really consider, we can still fully roll back with minimal impact and then make that fix and then continue rolling forward. So it gives you kind of that level of security, and it makes PRs a lot easier to review and get in, because we can ship things that are like a single unit of work that might not make it functionally completely functional, but it's at least like a single unit that's easy to review, easy to think about, minimize risk of potential unrelated issues unforeseen in production. So we can really isolate like this specific commit with these like handful of changes versus like redoing this entire thing all at once, crossing our fingers, no idea what actually breaks, and having a lot of those issues. So I think that was made this change really easy, really low risk, and I wasn't really concerned about it because of this feature toggle. But the way we kind of set it up was kind of mirroring some of the basics that the Rails SF pipeline already gave us. And I think you linked to a pretty good article. It was titled Squeezing Webpack into Backend Frameworks, and it was actually pretty specific to Rails. And this kind of was what we had in mind, and this kind of reinsured that like the general approach that we were going for made sense. And we also considered maybe using Webpacker, but that, again, keeps our front end very coupled to Rails. And we kind of want to keep that decoupled so that we can kind of potentially isolate them or just upgrade, evolve them in different ways. And it seemed like it could introduce some additional complexity of having this Rails Webpack config on top of an already very complex Webpack configuration. And maybe a little concerned about potentially if we wanted to use some obscure Webpack setup that we'd kind of have to know this like abstraction on top of this already complex thing. So wanted to kind of steer somewhat clear of that. So the approach that we took, which was kind of outlined in that post, is the Rails asset pipeline, or sprockets, outputs this sprockets manifest file. And whenever the assets are compiled, it's a JSON file that has the file name mapped to whatever output file that is, which is usually the name of the file with some random MD5 hash, I think it is. And then that kind of is used to look up that file. So in your view, you can say asset path, maybe main.js or application.js, and that'll look up like application dash very long random hash.js. And you can add your CDN URL into the front of that, and it'll kind of take care of most of that for you. So that was one nice thing about putting Webpack through the asset pipeline, is all of that just happened. We got all of the Rails helpers. We didn't have to worry about it at all. But so we kind of mirrored that and stripped out most of the complexity. So we added a Webpack manifest plugin. And when you run Webpack, it now outputs a JSON file with all of the files Webpack outputs, with the same kind of setup of a key that maps to that where that file lives, with the content hash as part of that file name. So now we have this JSON hash that has like main.js, and that points to main-content-hash.js. And then we created a really simple helper in Rails that will look at that file and basically do the same thing, append the CDN URL and kind of link to that file.
Yeah, it's a great overview. And I'm sure we're not the only ones on Rails trying to figure out how to leverage Webpack for some of our front end code while still working with the asset pipeline. So yeah, I definitely recommend checking out that article for more details, and maybe you'll get something published at some point too, huh, Spencer?
Yeah, maybe.
So one other thing that I thought was nice was that rather than even having to update anything around our builds, you were able to sneak this into the public directory that we're already pushing up to our CDN. So really this wasn't a whole lot of, this wasn't a very big, or didn't require much extra configuration or anything in our builds. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it was fairly easy, because previously we were outputting the Webpack to front end dist, and that's where all the files distribution files kind of lived. And then we had that in Gitignore, so that was never checked in. But then the Rails asset pipeline has this concept of manifest files, and those manifest files pointed to those files that lived in front-end disk. So that's how they were originally getting included. But like you said, the entire public, we have a public directory and with a lot of static assets that get pushed to the CDN. And that's where, also where the Rails asset pipeline also outputs the built files. So we just updated the Webpack output to also point to that public directory. And then everything kind of just continued to work as it did, which was really nice. So we didn't have to update any additional build steps or deploy steps or anything around the CDN because of that setup that already existed.
Yeah, that's great. So do you think we're at the point now where we can think about using Webpack for pushing other types of assets through, like our images and other things that we are referencing? Like we kind of have some workarounds for referencing things through the asset pipeline in our code built by Webpack. How far are we away from, you know, just moving most things over to Webpack?
Yeah, I think now with this setup, we should be pretty much open to adding additional like loaders if we wanted to include images through the Webpack build process, which I think would be pretty awesome. Because like you said, we have to pass a bunch of information of like where these files actually live on the CDN because we rely on the asset pipeline today. So there's a bunch of like backend logic as well as client logic, and you have to remember to use the right component to magically look up where this file lives. Whereas with Webpack, that can be streamlined and be a really nice development experience of just like importing the image file and using it. I haven't dove into it too much, so I don't know how the performance looks around that in terms of like if there's a lot of overhead added to the Webpack build step. But I know that was probably one of the most painful things of this, was that our Webpack build process is not the fastest. And if you typo something, if something isn't working as expected, it is not a slow process to get feedback on that. And I know you felt the pain when you were reviewing a lot of these PRs. Took a little longer than expected.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we need to figure out a way to, well, we need to do some performance work on our builds, but also even just a faster way of testing some of the builds. Like I think I did have this thought afterwards. We have one main file that imports all of our, we call them like root components. And it's basically the top level components that we render for each page. And could probably just comment all of those out except one, so we don't have build the entire you know, dependency hierarchy. But I'm gonna do that next time.
Yes, I have started to experiment with that, and that does make it a lot faster.
Well, yeah, I think that's really all we have for today. I was excited to talk about this topic because it's something that a number of people I've talked to at different companies are trying to figure out right now. Like they've been building a Rails app, or you know, a number of Rails apps over many years, and the asset pipeline got them along for a long time. But they want to start leveraging some of these newer build tools and tap into the full power of like the JavaScript ecosystem. And yeah, I know this is top of mind for a lot of people. So would love to hear how other people are what their experiences are with this, if they figured out alternative approaches or anything. But yeah, hopefully our experience here is helpful. Thank you, Spencer, for figuring all this out.
Thank you, Chris, for painfully reviewing all 8 variations of every single PR.
Great. So short but sweet today. If you have any questions or feedback, please hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. hosts@rubberducking.fm.
Show notes for this episode can be found at rubberducking.fm/16.